SABC Sport.
This is AFL Sunday with Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling.
AFL Sunday.
On radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And take us with you.
On ABC Listen.
Look for the AFL button.
Hello and welcome to AFL Sunday for round one. Six games completed, three to go. And for the first look at North Melbourne, Port Adelaide, Melbourne and the West Coast Eagles for season 2026. The Crows moved past their finals failure of 2025, snapping a 12-year hoodoo against the Pies at the MCG to win by 14 points. How significant is Collingwood's forward line woes?
Pushes it out wide. Keys is there. Gets the footy. Has a snap at goal. This time it's his chance from the pocket. And Keys goals. Salutes the Adelaide Crows cheer squad. A wonderful finish from him, involved in that passage of play a couple of times. And Keys all but make sure that Adelaide will be walking away from the MCG with a rare win.
The Swans start 2026, two wins and zero losses with a thumping win over an undermanned Brisbane Lions by 44 points. But it comes at a cost with injuries to Gordon, Heaney and McDonald ahead of the Hawks on Thursday night. Should Chris Fagan now be concerned about the reigning premiers?
At centre half forward, eventually picked up by Warner. He has a bounce, darts around another and chips it over the top for Amati.
Joel Amati's got a 50-metre penalty here.
Slabs it through. Joel Amati is five for the night.
And the Cats find their firepower with a comeback at home for the ages to give Dockers fans nightmares with another fade-out, leaving lingering questions.
Dangerfield's got it 55 out. Measures the kick to the pocket. Clark's the target. It's fisted away from him. And the Cats claw their way back to a stirring victory to get on the board in 2026. Thump last week. They respond in that familiar way and win it by 10.
While the Dogs emerge as early flag favourites with a couple of wins against final sides to start 2026, an 81-point victory over the Giants as the big names fired. Bontempelli with 33 and 3 goals, while Aaron Norton and Sam Darcy combined for 10 goals.
It's handed to Bontempelli, so he adds to his tally. Kicks for Darcy.
Good luck stopping that.
Darcy moves in, drop punt, good. It's a four-goal day for Sam Darcy. His tally's up to six for the season. Out of the middle they go again. Richards with the centre break, kicks deep to Norton, one out in the cage. Buckley does well to break it up. There's a free kick, though. Norton was being held. Free kick for Norton. It is just relentless out of the middle as Norton pops it through for number six. A half dozen for Aaron Norton.
Thanks for spending some of your Sunday with us. Matt Clinch with you for ABC Sport. For our South Australian audience, North Melbourne and Port Adelaide to kick off things from Docklands. It's also available on ABC Listen. Mitch Turner will take your calls on the Footy Forum while the Stephen King era gets underway as the Demons take on the Saints from the MCG. And we'll finally get to see the number one draft pick, Willem Dersma, for the West Coast Eagles if they have the tough task against the Gold Coast Suns at home. As always, we'd love to hear from you. What's the best bits of what you've seen from the weekend's footy? Can be a result, an individual, or perhaps something left of centre. 0437 774 774. As always, the three-time premiership player, premiership captain. He is a legend of Geelong. And as cricket season is coming to a close, he's with you once more on a Sunday. Cameron Ling, welcome to you.
Good afternoon, Clinchy. Great to be with you. Good afternoon to everyone out there. Hopefully you're enjoying this superb, superb Sunday. Yes, I wasn't at the Cattery yesterday cheering on the blue and white hoops, as I would love to be, because I was foolishly still playing cricket. We had a cricket final on, and Clinchy, you know where I should have been? I should have been at the Cattery, because we had a stinker. We batted awful. We got beaten comfortably. We lost. We're out. We're done. So now I'm locked onto footy season. I didn't have a good one myself. Caught down leg side, playing a little leg glance.
The keeper stuck
the glove out and took the catch. And I realised as I was walking off the ground, I'm like, geez, I hate this game sometimes. I'm in footy mode now. And I got to watch the second half of the Cats on TV. And saw a pretty important win, knocking off Fremantle.
That was the only bit you want to see. But yeah, nothing more disappointing than being strangled down the leg side. So, hey, bring on footy season.
Oh, I was absolutely fuming. We love on a Sunday afternoon, you and I, Clinchy, we'll talk all things footy, but certainly focus on a few highlights. And My highlight from the round so far, Clinchy, was over the years I've often looked at almost the heavyweight title belt, the player who owns that belt and is the champ of the entire competition, the number one player in the comp. And at different times over recent years, it's been Gary Ablett Jr., maybe Buddy Franklin held it for a little bit. I think there was certainly a period where Dusty Martin was the number one man. And probably in the last couple of years, with some contenders like Nick Daicos and these types of players, Marcus Bontempelli has held it. But maybe there was some debate. Is it still Bontempelli? Is it Daicos? Is Sam Darcy going to jump over the top of everyone and take it off them? Well, Marcus Bontempelli, he just reminded, if you don't want to tag me, I will show you I am the number one player in the competition.
Norton wheels and goes. Bontempelli, he marks in the goal square. And again, the Dogs go coast to coast. Mark it down as goal number three for Bontempelli.
He played an extraordinary game. It's rare that I stand in front of the group and blow smoke because, you know, I don't want him to feel uncomfortable. He knows what I think of him, what I feel about him. But, yeah, after today, it was necessary to definitely acknowledge, you know, how well he played. He was quite incredible, really. Like, it's I mean, there are other terrific contributors, but, you know, he's by far and away the most influential player. Oh, he and Aaron. I mean, Aaron's game was extraordinary as well. I mean, he was just a powerhouse down there. And so those two individuals had ridiculously good games.
Yeah, you're pretty unlucky if you've kicked 10 between Aaron Norton and Sam Darcy, but someone else is going to get all the pump-ups. Marcus Bontempelli, 33 disposals, 3 goals, and total domination of the game. Controlled it pretty much from start to finish. He is brilliant. I reckon, just as a hint for the rest of the teams out there, pay some attention to him. Run a tag. It doesn't have to be a hard, hard tag. I know that's not necessarily what all teams go with, but put a lot of time into him. You cannot let him do that in a game again.
Yeah, I love it. In a matchup in which he's been such a central figure, he and Toby Green, of course, they played State of Origin, so whether that still is relevant. The Bulldogs have had bragging rights over the Giants in recent history, but 33 disposals, 11 score involvements, 665 metres gain, and 3 goals. So in your eyes, Lingy, push Nick Daicos to one side. You think he's the most significant player, the most impactful player in the AFL today?
Marcus Bontempelli is, yes. Yep. And I think he's had it for the last couple of years too. I think he just influences moments like very few others. He kicks goals really regularly. The cool thing is, when we're talking about this, there are players banging down that door to try and rip that title belt off him, like Nick Daicos and a few others. But I think the Bont still holds it. And when he plays like that, to start off the season, he just says to everyone, hey, it's still my title. You want it? Come get it.
Yeah, I like it. And the strength of the Bulldogs, we'll touch on them a little later, but Ed Richards and his progression alongside Tom Liberatore, Joel Frazier through the middle, so Bontempelli can play across half forward and be that general and really dictate terms for the Bulldogs. For me, Lingy, I'm sort of gone a little left of centre. I mean, the emotion of Friday night, so much of it circled around Zach Merritt, his attempt to try and join the Hawks in the off-season, and then the news that he had to go back to the Bombers and how he would handle himself in that sort of lead-up of the last 6 months. I think he's sort of handled it just about as well as anyone can. He's fronted up, he's spoken about it, and then he's put his head down and went to work on Friday night, including this great goal.
Azimpi with the short kick out of defence. That's intercepted. Zach Merritt comes up with it. On the run. Merritt goals! Zach Merritt. I'm talking about the man on the Bombers. He pops it through. There's a moment.
All right, we can clarify it. That's a cheer. They were very, very happy, the Bombers supporters. Love the fact that their former skipper nailed the goal. And the teammates got there. And you know what? Sometimes, even if you don't totally feel it, just bluff it. You got teammates, just go and show the love. He deserved it. It was a fantastic goal on the run. You can see the relief on the replay on his face there, Mick. Yeah. That one went through.
Yeah.
He would have been dreading coming to this game and getting it out of the way.
I think so.
That would have felt good for him.
So, looking, you're part of the call. The reaction suggests that he retains the respect of the group, even though he's no longer their captain. And it probably broadens out the conversation now as to whether he wants to stay with the Bombers for the rest of his career. Will he ask the question at the end of the season once more? But, I mean, the challenge for Essendon is to show that they're making progress. And now that he's not captain, he'll go to work and do the best job he can individually.
Yeah, so just a couple of things on that, Clinchy. We watched really closely what the reaction of the crowd was when he first got the footy. We were just interested, Mick and myself and Corbs and Cal. And it was mixed when he got his first possession. It was kind of a half a cheer, half a jeer type thing. And we don't know what mix that was of Essendon fans and Hawthorn fans. I'm not sure why Hawthorn fans would have been getting into him because he wanted to go there. But it was strange. But as the game progressed and he kicked that goal, it was clear that the Essendon fans were behind him. It's like, okay, we've got to push that to one side. You're our player now still. So it was good that he could feel that relief of just playing the game. As far as what he does next year, their performance on Friday night, it's a long season ahead, but the performance on Friday night wouldn't have made him feel great about staying. They were terrible on Friday night. That margin could have been 120 points if Hawthorn kicked a little straighter maybe and maybe put the foot down fully. They conceded 150 uncontested marks. They were so, so, so easy to play against. It was an awful performance by the Bombers. So they're in for a tough year, but they need to be more competitive than that and not just let teams play almost match simulation at training against them and still beat them by 10 goals. There needs to be a progression, I think, if Zach's going to go, okay, I'll commit and finish my career at the Bombers.
Yep, it's going to be an interesting watch for the rest of the season. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with us. Let us know your highlights from the weekend's footy so far. 0437 774 774. Fran's been in touch early, wondering why the two Hawthorn players, Connor McDonald and Dylan Moore, were not suspended given their off-season indiscretion. I guess it happened in the off-season. It was still taking place with the courts in America, and Hawthorn released it. Well, the news broke earlier in the week, and I think the players were probably relieved to have it at least out in the openly rather than knowing that it was going to, at some stage, become public.
Yeah, they probably were relieved. I think Hawthorn have admitted to they should have handled it better too. I don't know why they thought they would just keep the whole thing a secret or try and keep it in-house. It wasn't going to stay there. So I always thought, you know, just be open and honest about it. Yes, they have made a big blue. Let's talk about it, release it, agree on a punishment, whatever that punishment might be. And do it in the off-season. That was an opportunity. So you've got clear air heading into the season. I think probably Hawthorn have admitted that too. They didn't need that extra distraction during the week. It didn't affect them in the game. But it's just not something you want right on the eve of or the doorstep of the finals, of the season.
Start of the season, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they learnt a lesson. Just be open and honest about it. You're not keeping things hidden now. There's no covering things up. Just speak about it and put your hand up and own the mistake.
Yep. Brendan from Hobart says Nick Dacos hasn't even played 100 games yet, so he's not in the prime of his career. To your comments around Marcus Bontempelli, but I think the Traralgon Tiger gets it. The Bont might be very good, excellent, amazing, or any other superlatives you can think of. However, most importantly, in my opinion, he's a good guy. All the best to him in 2026. So, yep, Nick Dacos might get there, but Cameron Ling believes Marcus Bontempelli is the number one player in the game right now in 2026. To the events at the MCG last night, where the Adelaide Crows were able to overcome a 12-year Collingwood curse at the MCG to win by 14 points. The Crows booted 6 goals in 20 minutes in the third quarter to establish a break. And while Collingwood fought hard in the final term, they couldn't get any closer than 12 points with 3 of the first goals of the final term. Riley Thilthorpe was a force once more for the Crows with 3 goals. Wayne Miller had 34 disposals in a career best, and Josh Worrell across halfback with 27, while Nick Dacos had 33 disposals and booted 2 goals. The Adelaide forward Riley Thilthorpe joined us in the post-match last night.
Yeah, a great win. A great team effort. It means a lot to us. So we're pretty pumped to get a good win in round one. And from here, we'll look to round two.
Yeah, we were definitely a bit rusty in the first quarter and a half, I thought. But we stood up when we were challenged. In the third quarter, we really got our award. So I thought the boys stuck in there really well. And, very pleasing game.
I noticed you went inside the centre square bounce, mate, and got one from one in there. Some clearance work out of the middle. Was there something you're looking forward to going forward, mate?
Yeah, absolutely love that. I thought I was going to go through the clearance, and I was pretty pumped. But Nah, it was a great team effort from all the boys. I thought Fogg competed really hard. Tex, obviously, really well. And the smalls competed when they were needed to. And Braden Cook, he's got one of the best kicks I've seen. And for him to finally start putting it together, you know, he's got his work rate up and he's fit as he's ever been. So I'm really pumped to see what he can do this year.
Where are you going to be better this year than what you were home and away last year?
Yeah, I think the growth internally, we've got another, you know, a lot of our boys are from 50 to 100 games now. So we're getting that experience. We obviously tasted finals and the step up. And we obviously went up to it last year, but that's what we've gone to work over the preseason and really put a focus on, you know, doing the fundamentals under pressure. So I think that's what you'll see from us more.
Your improvement this season, 60 goals last season. You spoke about training a bit more with the midfield. How's your body feeling? What's the goals for you?
Yeah, feeling good. Hopefully get around the ball a bit. I really enjoy that. But it's pretty tough to get Dawson, Rash and Ranks out of there sometimes. So I'm not quite sure how much I'll get. But, it's just keep growing all rounds and... you know, it's all about the team this year. I just want to do whatever I need to for the team, whatever position, and just, yeah, keep fighting.
And I guess it's frustrating everyone keeps referring to the disappointment of finals. How did you personally deal with that? Did you address it as a group? Did you go away in the summer and try and just push it to one side and work out how you're going to deal with it this year?
Yeah, definitely. Very disappointing. We sort of sat in it for a couple of weeks and then tried to get away and forget about it and then came back and really worked on what we needed to over the pre-season. And the boys trained at a level that's going to help us perform throughout the year. So we've come back and put our heads down and we're trying to get to work.
That's Adelaide Crows forward Riley Thilthorpe, who joined us after their victory last night over the Magpies. Cameron Ling, what was your assessment of last night's victory?
A really important victory, a terrific victory. And the Crows coming off, as Riley alluded to there, the disappointment of last year and the straight sets exit and the way it all ended with Isaac Rankin and all of that. So that's swirling around. And then throw in what felt like the preseason from hell a little bit with some really key bad injuries to important players like Curtin and Keane and these sorts of ones. And it possibly felt like that team that maybe rises up, shows promise, but then now there's a bunch of expectations and some bad luck and they have a bit of a season from hell and crash a little bit and then they go again the following year. A win like that last night maybe just pushes all that sort of bad vibe to one side and go, no, actually, we can deal with some adversity and we can overcome the disappointment of last year and a few key injuries and we are still a very, very good team. And so that, for their belief and all the work they've been doing in pre-season, it's such an important victory. I loved the game of Wayne Malera. I just thought he was superb. And it's funny, I was just going back and looking, thinking, he must be somewhere near 200 games now, Clinchy, given he's 28 years of age. He's only played 124 games. So he's had a rough run with injuries. He's had twice now torn patella tendons. Yeah. He was the draft pick they got for the Paddy Dangerfield trade. He was initially, it was pick 9, but then pushed back with matching bids to pick 11. And he's just taken a while to really get rolling because of some injuries and just growth and maturity. But his game was crucial to the way they played. And if he can take another step and become an All-Australian 40 type player, and that's another piece they add to already a really good team. They become a multi-dimensional team through the middle and running halfbacks and ball users and that are going to be really, really hard to play against. And then that forward line just functions so well.
Yeah, the question will be around their midfield. They will get Isaac Rankin back next week, who served his suspension for his homophobic slur. But the injuries, Dan Curtin out 8 to 12 weeks, Mitch Hinds 4 to 6, and Mark Keane is a long-term leg injury 10 to 14 weeks out. So they made the decision to go with McAndrew over Riley O'Brien to start the season. So big call from Matthew Nix to start the season. But you don't think beating Collingwood meant something to the Adelaide coach? Here he was in the post-game.
Some weeks you have a win and it's a nice grind. This one felt really good. And it is, from our point of view, we're sick of losing to them. And that's, and I mean that from a respect point of view. They're a very good side and they've had the wood on us. So to fight through like we did tonight and show that we're still developing, we're still getting better, is a really good sign. That's a big stage out there. And there's a period of time where, you know, the chant went up, the Collingwood chant came on. It was all things that we planned for, all things that we expected, and our guys were able to knuckle down in that moment and a number of moments following that and just get the job done.
The thoughts of Adelaide Crows coach Matthew Nix with you on AFL Sunday on ABC Sports. So 7 of the last 9 had been 10 points or less, Lingy. 6 had been under a goal. I mean, it's almost, as Matthew Nix made reference to, a finals-like atmosphere playing Collingwood at the MCG. So while it's a long season to get back to where they finished last year as the minor premiers, all you can do is start on a winning note.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's great practice. You know, do it at the G, do it in front of a big crowd, do it under that pressure and that feeling. And they did it well. I wonder how worried we need to start being about Collingwood. It's so early to say we're worrying, but just their ability to score has got me a little bit concerned, even though they came back and they are so good at never losing hope and they believe and they get on a run. But the scoring potency is not there at the moment. If we look across this round, take out the Thursday night game where Carlton won with a score of 75, all the other winners for this round are scored over 100 points. Last round, the opening round, a lot of teams scoring over 100 points. Teams have clearly focused on being able to attack and score and have that real efficiency. Collingwood win last week, but with a lowish score. And you think, oh, maybe that's because it's St Kilda, the way they defend. But then again last night, it didn't look super functional in their forward line. It didn't look quite as scary. Maybe it's highlighting how important Brody Meierchek was for this Collingwood team of bringing that forward line together. There's just something missing with their ability to really score and score heavily when they have momentum in games.
Yeah, no, I think that's the big question. Collingwood's forward line, 11 goals last week against the Saints and 11 goals last night against the Adelaide Crows. Here's the thoughts of the Collingwood coach, Craig McRae. And after that, Collingwood small forward, Lachie Schultz, I asked him about their forward line.
So I thought we're pretty average. And we played the team that finished top of the ladder last year, who, you know, first game of the year with high energy and whatever it looks like, and lost by 14 points. So I think there's blue sky in that. I think there's a lot of blue sky in that. You go, well, you know, we had our chances, and here we are. We're not getting much out of our keys. That's real. I'm not going to shy away from that. We've got work to do on that. We've got parts of our game that, and that's what you get at round one. You get opportunities to go against other teams and go, right, what's the issues right now? And, you know, centre bounce work has been a bit of a pattern for us, so we've got some work to do. And then, we've got some work forward the ball.
You just got to back the process. Obviously, you can sort of look at it glass half empty, and that's missing those shots that you'd really like back and you'd really like to capitalise on. But the glass half full approach is that we're getting those inside 50s and we're getting those looks. And I think going into half time, we've just got to keep sort of bringing that sort of spirit that we're on top here. It's going to turn. We're going to hit the scoreboard, and it's going to happen. And then try and get the momentum flowing from there. And you know what it's like. One goal can lead to two and two to three and so forth. And obviously disappointing that we didn't end up getting that to happen until late in the last or in the start of the last. But, as you said, we had our opportunities, something that we can sort of lean into going forward, but a lot to work on as well.
So that was Lachie Schultz from the Magpies. So it looks like they're trying to free up some money in their salary cap. Lingy, they'll have some retirements in due course. So the question will be whether they target a Ben King as a key forward and try and lure someone from another club.
Yeah, potentially that's what they might have to do if there's not a clear person who they think can really jump there. It's funny within a forward line how finely balanced that cohesion is often. So if you're a Jamie Elliott or Dugowie or McCreary, these smalls, you need to be able to have that focal point, and it's not. And with Meierchek not being there, you got to learn to play together. That takes time, unfortunately.
Yeah, and Bobby Hill missing as well. But yeah, the delivery inside 50 could definitely improve. For our South Australian audience, you're off to the footy. It's North Melbourne taking on Port Adelaide. It's the first outing for new coach Josh Carr. So looking forward to seeing how he goes with Lauren Borden, Joel Peterson, Nathan Burke, and Chad Wingard. As we'll continue to take your messages on the SMS 0437 774 774. This is AFL Sunday on ABC Sport.
You're listening to AFL Sunday with Matt Clinch and Cameron Lee.
AFL Sunday.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And take us with you.
On ABC Listen.
Look for the AFL button.
Scotty gave us a good wind-up, and he wasn't too impressed with the first quarter performance. And credit to him, he changed a few things, and I think it really just helped us steer the game in our direction.
Is that as firm as he gets?
Yeah, that's the firmest by a long shot I've seen him, yeah.
So have you heard it like that before, or that's as bad as it's been?
If that's a 10, he's probably got to about a 5 before, I reckon. So it was pretty... He's one of those guys, he won't yell at you, but he's very disappointed. He was very disappointed.
Well, I think the most important thing was the players had belief that if we did shift a few things that we could turn the momentum of the game. I mean, we were... But that's, you know, it's a rare situation to have that belief when you've been so badly outplayed. You know, they were dominant. But we thought we probably allowed them to do what they do best a bit too much. So when there was a bit more pressure around the ball, we thought like we gave ourselves a bit more of an even chance. But it obviously wasn't going to get fixed in the next quarter. It had to be a belief that over the course of three quarters we could work our way back into the game. So I'm proud of them for, you know, believing in the plan and getting it done.
AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, Matt Clinch and Cameron Ling with you. First was the thoughts of Max Holmes as he chatted with Andrew Mays and the spray in which Chris Scott delivered, and then the Geelong coach as the Cats stormed home to claim a 10-point win over the Fremantle Dockers. Shannon Neal was the hero in attack with 5 goals as the Cats claimed their first win of 2026. Geelong conceded 8 goals in the first quarter, Ling. That's their worst effort at Cadinia Park since 1983. And some have reported that Chris Scott used the word disgraceful in his spray at quarter time. It got the result.
It got the result. I love that from Max Holmes. It was the old when your parents talk to you and say, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. but it certainly seemed like he was angry and probably had every right to. Yeah, I think it was Shannon Neal who was quoted somewhere who said, Scott had used the word disgraceful. And I suppose when you concede 8 goals on your home deck after last week's performance, then that word is fair. And Scotty is one guy. I watched him closely, know him well. He doesn't believe in the old-fashioned spray, you know, all the time type thing. Rarely uses it. Would save it up for when it's very, very warranted. And that first quarter did warrant it. And he's right in what he's saying. They had to then... you don't just get a reaction because you go, oh, I'm going to try harder. You also need a plan to how you're going to get yourselves out of it, why it's going so wrong. So for them to then respond with, let's say, a boost in effort, but also with these are the things we need to do better and do well and focus on to get us out of this quagmire that we're in right now. It was a good win, important win. Freo are a good team, Clinchy. Luke Jackson was absolutely superb in that game. They've got genuine A-plus stars in Sarong and Brayshaw and these types of players. So beating a team at home that's probably going to be very, very similar to you on the ladder come the end of the year, you got to make sure you get those done. So that was important for the Cats.
Yeah, it was certainly a psychological win for Geelong. Patrick Dangerfield, 35 years of age, played just 55% game time. Didn't have the biggest influence after missing opening round against the Suns. Where do you see Geelong's sort of deficiencies this season that you're most keen to sort of focus on if they're to progress back towards a top four side?
Well, I think it only highlighted the first quarter, only highlighted the same as last week against the Gold Coast Suns. If you don't have a genuine edge to defend and defend well and cut off the opposition outlets and play with a real hunger to turn the ball over, then teams are just going to slice and dice you. I think that's going to be right across the comp. It's certainly going to happen to Geelong. You can't just win on firepower alone. You don't have enough of it. So Geelong flipped that around and they played much better. When they play with a real commitment to defend and win the contest and everything like that, they've got some players who can break the game open. Max Holmes was terrific again with 32 touches. Bailey Smith runs hard and covers the ground. Jeremy Cameron up forward. Just his influence to then push the second or third defender onto Shannon Neal means Neal then bobs up and kicks 5 goals, as opposed to Neal having to contend with the best defender. So his presence alone, combined with the 3 goals and what he does with the footy, helps. So they took a nice step forward in the next 3 quarters to where they want to be, but they're still right now a bit of a way off the very, very best teams. But that's okay. It's round 1. It's mid-March. It's fine to be that little bit off. you just don't want to end up getting yourself too far behind the eight ball.
Yep, 3 goals, 4 for Jeremy Cameron. Max Holmes, when he's up and flying, makes Geelong such a better side. And the 1-2 punch with Bailey Smith, both of them had 32 and 31 disposals. For the Fremantle Dockers, though, Lingy, it's a disappointing sort of feeling as they think they started so well, their best start away from Perth with 8 goals in that opening quarter, and yet in that final term, I think their kicking efficiency was around 59% as the Cats came storming home. How does Justin Longmuir try to encourage his side to learn these lessons early in the season?
Yeah, and it's for them, it's purely that skill execution and holding strong to what you want to do as a team under increased pressure. So Geelong definitely ratcheted up the pressure around the contest, the better defensive decisions away from the ball, closed Fremantle's space down. So they did that well, but Fremantle's still got to trust themselves and back themselves to be able to get through that. Even if teams are coming at them defensively, hold your nerve, execute your skill, and have those good attacking entries. They fell away in that area, yes. I want to touch on this a little bit later on, Clinchy. I think now with a game under their belt, they'll be more ready to handle that sort of pressure. The very first game you play, often it's almost a bit of a shock when teams are coming at you properly. You're not playing pracky matches anymore, and you're not playing intra-clubs or match simulation at training. These opposition players are coming at you for real, and you just need to adjust a little bit and speed your skill delivery or execution up by a half a second or a quarter of a second. Otherwise, you'll be caught or you'll be knocked or whatever it might be. Freo will be more ready for that next week.
Yep, so we might save the conversation around opening round and Justin Longmuir's yes, thoughts for your last word. Where do you sort of have Fremantle in your predictions and estimations as to where you think they'll be at the end of the season?
Finals bound, very much finals bound. I don't think I've got them in the top four right now in my mind, the way it's shaping up. Sydney injuries have just got me questioning a little bit that top four, but I haven't quite got them top four, but I've got them, you know, that 5 or 6 spot.
Yep.
I don't, maybe they fall to 7th, and with the new system we've got, 7th puts you at risk of that wild card game. But I think they're good enough to be in the top section of the bottom 4 of the 8, the 5th to 8th spots.
No, we're on exactly the same page. I think they should be banging on the door of the top 4, whether they're good enough to get there, win their games at home, and then, yeah, if they could have won yesterday, the game in Geelong, they're the type of games that will get them as a top 4 side. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport, on ABC Local Radio, ABC Sport Digital, and of course on ABC Listen. Just look for the AFL button. Some of your thoughts on the SMS, 0437 774 774. Peter from Launceston's been in touch. Am I the only person who hates the Stan rule? Grown men treated like 8-year-olds, maybe a 2-metre zone left or right rather than having to stand stock still. What do you think?
Just quickly, I know we've already spoken about the Collingwood Adelaide game. I hated that 50-metre penalty when I think it was Fogarty took the mark. Yep. I think it was Fogarty. And 4 Collingwood players have immediately retreated. They've run over. There was 4 or 5 of them. And the umpire called a 50. To me, they got out of there as quick as they needed to get out of there. And which one of them was to know that they were supposed to be on the mark? I hate that being a 50-metre penalty, Clinchy.
I think there was 2 against Collingwood in the final quarter.
Oh.
Jeff from the Kimberleys wants to know what the inside 50s was between Adelaide and Collingwood. Collingwood won the inside 50s, so they kicked 11 goals from 59 inside 50, so the Crows had 13 goals from their 55. So Collingwood 59 to Adelaide 55, so an improvement from last week, but there was a couple other stats that stood out in terms of swinging the way of the Crows. Hi, gents. I'm very excited about the wind at North Melbourne. We'll have the win at North Melbourne. We'll have over Port Adelaide. A little typo there. And the surprise bracket they will be this season. All of a sudden, the pressure is starting to mount in the off-season on the Kangaroos. Lingy, I'm not sure how much of this you've taken in, but Dr. Sonia Hood, the president of North Melbourne, issued a letter saying we aren't starting over anymore. The foundations are well and truly laid. We're focused on the build and process for long enough. Now the conversation And critically, our performances must shift. So all of a sudden, the goalposts are being sort of aligned before the season's even started.
Yeah, and I don't mind that. Set the expectations strong. And I think they've got enough of a core of those young players with 40 games under their belt, 80 games under their belt, 120 games under their belt. And, okay, now it shifts into less of a development phase, still development, but less of a development phase into more of a performance phase for them. I like that. I've tipped them to beat Port Adelaide. I think they'll be improved. I don't quite see them... Well, I don't see them making top six and being safe inside the finals. Could they somehow scrap and fight and pinch wins here and there and really get an improvement and finish 10th, 9th and get a wild card spot? Maybe. But, yeah, I see them being much more improved. They're a dangerous game each week from now on.
Yep. Sonia Hood's line, the potential phase is over. So now the players have to try and live by that mantra. New captain in Nick Larkey this season. So they take on Port Adelaide in the first game of this Sunday of round one. And a couple agreeing with you, including Brett in Canberra. Agree with Lingy, the Bont is the best player in the game at the moment. My highlight was the Crows and the Blues hanging on. So let us know your highlights from the weekend's footy. 0437 774 774. Or can be something you're looking forward to from the three games to take place today. The Sydney Swans, well, they secured a 44-point win over the Brisbane Lions last night, but it did come at a cost. Errol Goulden and Isaac Heaney failed to finish the game. Goulden's the concerning one, given he missed such a large portion of last season. He was the Sydney Swans coach, Dean Cox, on their win.
Yeah, we were really pleased with that. You know, I think probably another part is the ability to take on the back-to-back premiers and to play the way we wanted to. Our turnover game really improved, and you know, we were able to capitalise from some of those moments. So I think that was probably the most pleasing part, and then also to convert from when we're in front.
So we know Brisbane were missing some players, Lingy, but it was over at quarter time, really. First seven goals of the match, and we're able to open up such a gap on the Brisbane Lions that it never really felt like the Lions were going to come back. Joel Amati led the way with five goals, and while Charlie Kerno was quiet, the Swans once more look like they're ready for a climb back up the ladder.
Oh, and just purely from a football watching perspective, I hate the fact that Goulden and Heaney are injured, because when the Swans are flying across the ground and their ball use is on, geez, they look good. And they're led by those two, and throw in Warner through the middle, Blakey off half back. The ball just pings around, and they caught Brisbane out completely. And Brisbane were missing key players, I acknowledge that. And they're also coming off a shorter pre-season and everything that comes with making a grand final and winning a premiership. So no, I'm not writing off Brisbane for a second, but Sydney looked superb with the way they used the footy and the way that they covered the ground. And they are going to be incredibly dangerous. And as you said, Charlie Kerno is just being allowed to find his feet and his rhythm and his connection with his teammates without having to have that much pressure put on him at the moment. He's just playing, and it's not affecting anything right now, which is really good. I'm desperate for Goulden to be okay. I know I shouldn't be barracking that much for one particular player, but I love watching him play. I often, even just when I'm watching a Swans game with my kids, just say, just watch his decisions and his skill to hit those kicks. The whole game opens up when Errol Goulden has the ball in his hand and uses it like he does. I hope he's okay.
Yeah. The other player I think who's worth a shout is Tom McCartan. Sydney tried him as a forward last season. Their half-back line is coming along well with Nick Blakey, and Riley Bice looks like he's a player there as well. 28 disposals last night, but it was the injuries to Errol Goulden and Isaac Heaney both came off with around sort of 16 minutes remaining in the final quarter. He was the Sydney coach, Dean Cox.
It'll be what it will be, unfortunately. So hopefully it is quick. If it is longer than normal, well, then so be it as well. You know, we've got to make sure that we do whatever we can to get him right as quickly as we can, which might be Monday, Tuesday, might be a little bit longer. Yeah. So it gets to that stage of the game where he come out of the centre bounce and felt his hamstring, and it was, you know, something that we don't want to risk at all. So, you know, the option for him to come to the bench and assess it will do in the next couple of days, as well as Errol, and work out if there is any damage, and if it is, what is it? If it's not, well, great, he'll get on the plane and go to Hawthorn.
Dean Cox, the Sydney Swans coach, AFL Sunday on ABC Sports. So the Swans won 12 games last season, Lingy. There were 7 wins and 3 losses when Errol Goulden played. He featured in just the 10 games last season. We know how versatile Isaac Heaney is as well, with his ability to contribute in the midfield and up forward. So, four-day turnaround. They take on the Hawks on Thursday night at the MCG. So, what a clash that's going to be, but the challenge for Dean Cox as to who will be available.
Yeah, and I think they're just reminding us that they're a grand final team, 2 years ago, and then even a couple of years before that as well. So they are a very, very good football team who last year just started so far behind the eight ball with all the injuries and having made the grand final and the shorter preparation and the injuries mounted. And then it mounted some more and they had a bit of a horror year and they still ended up playing some pretty decent footy at times. When they're fit and healthy and flying across the ground, they belong in the conversation at the very, very pointy end of the ladder. And that's the way they've started this season, set themselves up beautifully. And as Dean Cox said, it'll be what it'll be, but let's hope those two players in particular are back playing, because for those who just love watching great footy, I want Goulden and Heaney on the park.
And the players are out for the Brisbane Lions. We knew Harris Andrews received that 3-game suspension, Darcy Gardner for a week, Zach Bailey as well, and then the news that Logan Morris was out as well. Is Chris Fagan panicking? Not yet.
I'm not surprised that the tempo found us out in the first quarter, because there's a lot of guys who just haven't been playing at that level for a long time, and it sort of didn't surprise me, I guess. I was hoping it wouldn't happen, but in my heart I thought this could be tough for those guys, because we had to make so many changes this week. Not an excuse. Sydney were brilliant in the first quarter and they played better tonight and clearly should have won, but I liked the way we dug in. I thought good signs there, and all those blokes will be better for the opportunity, and you know, we'll get some troops back after our bye next week. It was good to have a bye next week. I don't normally say that after playing a couple of games, but for us it will be very handy. We'll walk away from this game with a lot more positives than negatives, and I think you know, down the track this game will help us.
So Chris Fagan with his thoughts. The Brisbane Lions are one of four sides that have the bye next week, alongside Carlton, Collingwood and Geelong. Concernly?
No. I think I said it last week too. I'm not concerned. The only trouble, he's right, the bye coming at a magnificent time for them to get a couple of those little niggly injuries back. The only concern is simply how hard it is to string together 8 wins in a row in our comp, or 6 wins in a row. You don't want to have to do that through that tough round 12 to 18 period. You want to be able to manage your players a little bit more through there to then come out of that and peak them for the final series, like they've done so well for the last couple of years. But if you end up at 0-3, 1-4, perhaps to start the season, then you do need to string together a 6 or 7 win block to make sure you can still finish top 4, top 5, whatever it might be. So that's my only concern, is if losses start mounting too much now, if they can split the ledger, it's, let's say after 6 games, the Brisbane Lions are 3-3, then they're good as gold. Then that. They're fine. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. They can build the season the way they want to build it. If it's 1-5, or heaven forbid 0-6, yeah, then obviously it gets really, really hard to scramble back from that.
Yep. Dane Zorko led the way with 30 disposals for the Lions. Lockie Neal with 28, no surprise there. It was the job of Ryan Lester on Charlie Curnow in an undersized defence. And yeah, in his first game for Brisbane, Sam Draper had 8 disposals and kicked 3 behinds Oscar Allen with just the 1 goal. AFL Sunday on ABC Sport. Lingy's already sung the praises of Marcus Bontempelli at the start of the program as his standout of the weekend's footy. But the Bulldogs are unbeaten so far in their opening 2 games. Lingy wins against the Brisbane Lions and now GWS. So the Giants were a little slow in patches, but in the second half it was all one-way traffic. And for the Western Bulldogs coach Luke Beveridge, he was happy with their back line.
As much as we've gone to work on a handful of things that hopefully improve defensive aggregate against, our plan was to always make sure it didn't compromise our ability to score. So you'd make a case that right now that looks okay. You know, although Brisbane scored, I think, 106 points last week, I mean, they're a great team. It's going to be hard to minimise scoring every week. But so I think it's probably on balance. It's just it's equal terms. I mean, we want to score. But you'd have to say today was a pretty good source pressure and defensive effort.
So as we look at the sides that have scored over 100 points so far in this round, there's five of the teams that have done so. It's maybe the Bulldogs who offer the biggest weapons in their forward 50, especially when you can get ten goals from Aaron Norton, who booted six, and Sam Darcy, who booted four, Marcus Spontopelli with three, but an 81-point win over the Giants. He looked so good the week before against the Hawks, Lingy.
Yeah, it was. Bulldogs look good, don't they? They look really, really sharp. And Luke Beveridge talking about the defensive stuff there. They've clearly worked on a bit of that. Their midfield has always been good, but I think it's deeper now. And that forward line functioning efficiently together, where there's isolation, where Norton's competing against his own opponent only. Sam Darcy's competing against his own opponent only, not running into each other. That's a great sign. Gee, they look like they've got a good one with Lachie Jakes. Yeah. Geelong boy, Clint, you got to give him a shout out. Former Joey's boy. But he just looks really good. Had 29 disposals yesterday as well. A good ball user, smart, has fitted in really well and is adding something to the team. The Giants had that good win against the Hawks, but maybe, and it's hard, the sample size is small, maybe it wasn't great. Maybe the Hawks were just really, really poor and defensively poor and let the Giants through. I think the Giants are suffering from the players that they're missing at the moment. They've got really key outs in their team still. They're probably starting just back a little bit, and the Dogs found them out. The Dogs are sharp, full team, really ready and primed to start this season. The Giants are still probably a couple of weeks off their best, and it possibly just highlighted the Hawks were really a long way off their best footy the week before, and they corrected a lot of things to take on the Bombers on Friday night. So Dogs are sharp. Dogs are going to be in that group, I think. And, I mean, they were stiff to miss the eight last year, the Bulldogs. What, they end up with 14 wins or something?
Yeah, lost to Freo.
Yeah.
Missed their final spot. So they're taking the lessons and trying to make sure they're a top four side, which would be the first time they're able to do so in Luke Beveridge's tenure. They take on the Adelaide Crows on Friday night. So great test for the Bulldogs to travel to Adelaide and to take on the Crows, where they lost just one game in the home and away season at their home base. Here was Adam Kingsley, the Giants coach, in defeat.
I trust our midfield. We've got a lot of good players through there. We just didn't play well today. As I said, it's 1 week. Unfortunately, it was almost like a carbon copy of last year in this moment at this ground against this opposition. And, you know, I felt like we were in a fair bit better shape than that. So, yeah, I'm pretty disappointed with the way that we lost the margin, clearly.
The Giants host St Kilda next Saturday back at their home ground. So Adam Kingsley keen to get back on the winners list. Each Sunday, we like to close our program with Cameron Ling and his last word.
Geelong Premiership player Doug Wade to present the Premiership Cup to Cameron Ling and the Geelong Football Club.
Blackie, toughest opponent.
Cameron Ling.
Ben Cousins. Toughest opponent.
Cameron Ling.
Dane Swan. Toughest opponent.
Probably Cameron Ling.
The hardest defender you've ever played on Bucks.
Cameron Ling.
Thank you very much, gents. Appreciate that a lot. Now, with my last word, it's normally me just going on and on and on, but I'm actually going to use some audio here, Clinchy, which is very, very rare because it's going to support the point that I want to make. I'm going to start off with the Fremantle Dockers coach, Justin Longmuir. They played their first game of the season yesterday against the Cats, who were playing their second game of the season. Justin, over to you.
It looked like a bit of attrition at the end. You look really tired. They look full of energy. Anything to do with opening round v round one? I mean, again.
Well, do you think there is?
I do. Yeah.
Well, I think anyone who's been around football would realise it's an advantage. Yeah, we should all start the season the same way. There should be no competitive advantage in teams having played a game before they play another team. It just makes so much sense to people in the industry, and we've just got it wrong.
Have you or the club taken that to the AFL yet?
We've said it enough.
I've always said Justin Longmuir is a very, very smart, sensible man. He could not have said that any better. The opening round is a ridiculous advantage, and our AFL will say, no, it's this, it's that, the other. When you enter round one, so the traditional round one, you are nervous, You are unsure if you're fit enough. You even players who've played 250 games are thinking, geez, has the work that we've done in preseason been the right work? How are we going to match up against opposition? You are a little bit rushed with your disposals. You're not quite ready for the full-on hits that you're going to cop because you've done match simulation, you've done practice matches where you all kind of just semi-look after each other. The real hits, they hurt more and you get rushed a little bit more. After that first game, when you've got that first one under your belt, you just feel more comfortable. Oh, actually, yeah, no, I still am a good player. Yes, I am fit enough. Oh, yeah, that contact that's going to come, it's fine. I can brush that and I can still get my handball away. You're just more ready for genuine home and away match play. So by the second game you play, you definitely are ready, more ready to play. So Fremantle playing their first, being maybe that touch off, touch unsure versus Geelong, it's a huge advantage. So they should not be starting the season with some teams playing and some teams missing. Now, let the AFL argue it here because Andrew Dillon, the CEO, he spoke about what opening round was for them.
Everything's up for review and I think it has been documented that next year we've got the sesquicentenary test at the MCG, which will be honoured around this time. So I think the start of the season will look different next year, and the team at the AFL are working, you know, with the clubs about how that might look. But if going back to opening round, I think if you look at the you know, the crowd that we got at the SCG, great crowd at the Gabba, strong crowds at NG Stadium and also for the Gold Coast, and then to finish it off with that, you know, St Kilda Collingwood game in front of 82,000. I think that was above our expectations. And, you know, we've seen some, you know, really solid crowds also at the G the last two nights.
So that's the AFL CEO, Andrew Dillon, who was on AFL Saturday yesterday with Daniel Harford, Corbin Middlemass and Mick Malthouse. It's available as a podcast under the ABC AFL feed. So in a perfect world, Lingy, how would you start the season?
There's this crazy concept. Everybody plays in the first round of the season, Clinchy. I know that's a foreign concept and might be too left field thinking, but everybody plays.
So the only problems with that is that the Perth Stadium's not available. The Matildas are currently using that. The Adelaide Oval hasn't been available. So the two, you know, South Australian and WA sides have to play away to start round one. So that makes it a little challenging.
Okay, but Perth Stadium's probably going to be available next year.
Hopefully,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Matildas won't be there. Let's say the Adelaide Oval's not. Let's say one of them. Okay, there's a bit of shuffling around. What we can still end up with is Sydney and the Giants playing in Sydney and Brisbane and the Gold Coast still playing in Queensland. Sure, if that's, you want to get that momentum up in those northern states as you're still trying to grow the game there, sure, that's fine. Get big crowds there because it's the first game. But let's get everybody playing. Our fixture, the AFL fixture, is so ridiculously unfair anyway, and we're never going to get it to a point where it's fair. Don't make it more unfair. Don't invent ways to make it more unbalanced. Let's just have it round one where everybody plays. So by round two, everybody is in the same boat and their preparation is the same. That we've got to find ways to just make things fairer, that a team like Freo isn't playing their first game against a team like the Cats who are playing their second game. I know, I love it because the Cats got an advantage out of it,
yep.
But it should not be the case, Clinchy. Should not happen.
The other option is all the teams who play opening round, they play against other sides in round one. That's the other possibility. It's a good chance for you to get involved on the talk back line with the Footy Forum, Mitch Turner hosting alongside Glenn Quatermain and Jake Knowles. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of questions coming through about opening round. Linging North Melbourne and Port Adelaide, who wins?
I've got the Kangas to win that one, Clinchy.
Question on the SMS, how many wins this season for the Kangaroos in your eyes?
Let's say 10.
10. And Melbourne or St Kilda from the MCG?
You know what? I've tipped the Saints. I do want to wish my old mate Stephen King all the best for his first game in the coach's box as the head honcho. But I think the Saints will just have a little bit much for the D's.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think St Kilda as well. Although I'm looking forward to seeing the two picket boys, Cozzy alongside Latrell. Lingy, thanks as always for your company on a Sunday. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Clinchy. All the best.
Cameron Ling joining you. For some of our listeners, you're off to North Melbourne and Port Adelaide. It's on ABC Listen. For everyone else, the Footy Forum coming up next. Chat to you from the G.